Well, spring is underway once again, and that means it's time for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world, with Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS, and our resident entomologist. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about our insect world, both fiendish and friendly, at 800-552-8502. Again, that number is 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, glad to have you back with us.
I'm glad to be back, Bill. It's time for another season.
So let's go ahead and get started with what's going on new in the insect world. I know the Zika virus has made the news a lot lately. Last year and the year before, it was the emerald ash borer. So what's going on in our area that folks should be alerted about?
Well, it started off with the chikungunya virus that is down in the Caribbean. And now it's the Zika virus that's pretty much in the same locality. And the situation that we're looking at is that the mosquitoes that carry the West Nile virus, which of course we definitely have here, can also carry the other two viruses, the Zika virus and the chikungunya virus. And that means that it's not a matter of when these viruses are going to move into the southeastern part of the United States, but well,
it's a matter of when, not if, yeah.
Yeah, when, not if. And so I think there's a lot of call for action to be proactive, to start making vaccines now. But, of course, that costs a lot of money, and nobody wants to raise taxes for anything like that. But it's going to get very serious very soon. Another new thing that's occurred, believe it or not, they have sequenced the DNA of the bedbug.
Oh, really?
Yes. Now, what they're planning to do with that is to look at certain areas in the DNA that might be vulnerable, that we might be able to disrupt their life cycle. And so that might be a promising outcome since we've had this bedbug problem now increasing in both Europe and in the United States for the last 10 years.
Now, it seems like this is along with, viruses that become resistant to or bacteria that become resistant to antibiotics. This is nature doing for itself what we don't want it to do, which is creating stronger and stronger insects. Adaptation through the necessity. Basically, the ones that are weak die off, and the ones that don't die off, they're the ones who procreate, and they create a stronger strain. And that's evolution,
right,
basically, in the process.
Yes, it is.
We're actually watching that unfold in my lifetime, you know.
Well, absolutely. In fact, it started back in the 1940s and 50s when the insects became resistant to DDT. You know, they used to be able to use a half a pound of DDT per acre, and then in the height, they were using 4 to 5 pounds of DDT per acre. And whether it's insects, whether it's microbials, if we put a what we call in science a selection pressure on that population, then those with certain genetic diversity are going to live, and those that don't have certain genetic diversity are going to die. And then you say procreation takes it from there.
Yes, indeed. You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden, our resident entomologist. And you can call tonight at 800-552-8502. Once again, the number to call is 800-552-8502. Any question about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind, are welcome. We have our first call tonight, Andy from Huntsville, Texas. You're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes. I noticed last year I had a dirt diver nest that ladybugs moved into in thousands. Not hundreds. It was a bunch. And I was wondering if there was something where I left my dirt diver's nest up to encourage ladybugs, or if y'all had ever witnessed this.
Absolutely. Not so much with dirt diver nests, but ladybugs, when it starts being late fall, they will release a chemical. It's called an aggregation pheromone. And the ladybugs will aggregate. They will move to a certain point. Normally, it is in a southwestern direction or a southwestern pointing direction, and they'll go in houses, they'll take shelter anywhere they can find it. And I suppose that a dirt dauber nest would be a pretty good shelter. Those, if you've ever tried to take a hammer and crack one of those things open, it's almost like concrete. And so I'm not surprised. So if you want to encourage ladybugs overwintering, leave your dirt dauber nest up.
Okay, right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Andy.
And ladybugs are actually good for your garden and for your surrounding environments because they are a predator insect that doesn't carry much of a distress for us. Is that correct? They don't carry many diseases or anything like that.
Both the immatures of ladybugs and the adults of ladybugs are both predators on many of our home, garden, and ornamental pest plants. In fact, this weekend, there's going to be an event at Cyport called the Bug Bazaar, starting at 9, going to 1. And at 12 o'clock, they're supposed to be releasing 100,000 ladybugs.
Yeah, okay.
And so if you bring the kids out to Cyport this Saturday for the Bug Bazaar from 9 to 1.
Now, will they all crawl away or will they fly away?
Well, I think I'm kind of concerned about that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they'll do. I think a lot of it depends upon the weather, but they'll certainly disperse within time.
Right. Yes. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 with any questions or concerns that you would like to about the insect world. And you were mentioning beforehand that during the last show, we had a question that kind of stumped you, and that was about an insect that was boring into a gas tank. And Dr. Burden has done some research and actually found some information about that. If that caller happens to be listening, you might want to give us a call tonight, too, to find out more about this.
What I did was I have several friends in the entomological world, and I know some of them are very good at insect trivia and such. And so I kind of sent some email out to them asking them about this phenomenon. And it didn't take very long until they got back to me, and it was actually a study done right here in Louisiana by a couple friends of mine, Victoria Bayless and Chris Carlton, and they published this in a Bio One publication site, and it says the case of, and I don't want to do the scientific name, but there's these little, what they call bark beetles, scalenids. So there was a case of females damaging plastic fuel storage containers in Louisiana. And sure enough, apparently the gasoline smell mimics the smell of making the females want to bore into the wood to lay eggs. And they were actually boring into these fuel containers. And I thought, you know, I knew the guy wasn't pulling my leg, but I thought, there's just no way. But sure enough, learned something every day. It was absolutely fascinating. So that's what's going on. So if you have little holes in your gas containers, you know it's the little beetles boring into them.
No, that's interesting. So that chemical trace that they're getting from the gasoline is chemically similar to what would trigger their natural boring instinct.
Yeah, we call it a chemical mimic.
Yeah.
You know, or sometimes they use the word analog. It's close, but it's not quite the same. And so that was very, very interesting to me. And I appreciate that caller calling in, and because I would have never thought that in a thousand years.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our expert, Dr. Beverly Burden, and she is a resident biologist and associate biologist at LSUS and our resident entomologist. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We're going to go to our next caller. Ray, you are online. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Squash beetles. What can be done to keep them away from my squash plants? And I'll take the answer on the radio. The squash beetles.
Thanks, Ray. There's two primary main beetles that attack squash plants, and those are the squash beetles that actually will eat the foliage, will eat the leaves. And there's two kinds. There's the spotted squash beetle and the striped squash beetle, and they do pretty much the same damage. Now, you can try an insecticidal soap, but that's normally only effective against soft-bodied animals. But these are actual beetles. And so they have that hard external exoskeleton, the elytra of the forewings. And so I would go back and I would just try some kind of a pyrethroid spray on the plants. If you read the active ingredients of a insecticide bottle, and it's in the chemical ends in THRIN, that's a pyrethrin, that would be very effective. Or you might want to go to some of the botanicals of spraying some of the lemon oils or eucalyptus oils on the plants, and that might be effective as well. But and then the other insect I was talking about is the squash vine borer. And this is a little caterpillar that bores through the vines, and they do so much damage by the time you realize you have a problem, the plant's already dead. And the only way you can do that is to use a row cover or put foil around the base of the plant so the females can't lay their eggs there.
Now, last year, we also had a discussion about the emerald ash borer,
yes,
which, of course, for those who like baseball, you know that ash trees are primary concern to baseball players as they make the bats from those. What is going on in our area with that borer now?
Well, they continue to move westward. Last year, they were in Webster Parish, and I wouldn't be at all surprised. I haven't talked to Ricky Kilpatrick in a while, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're already in Bossier and across Caddo. They're not very small. I mean, they're not very large insects. They're relatively small, and I'm not sure how they can cross the Red River, but they've moved from the northeast. They get around. That's not a problem.
Yeah, bugs, you know, seem to have less trouble crossing rivers than we do. So
exactly.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We'll go next to Texarkana. And Bruce, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Hello, I was wanting some information about the so-called kissing bug and whether or not they're in this area.
Not yet, but let me tell you about these kissing bugs. They are close relatives to stink bugs. They are in what we call the true bug category, and they have piercing, sucking mouth parts. And some of them feed on plants, and some of them feed on other insects, and some of them feed on us, on mammals. And what they do is they're nocturnal, and they come out at night, and they literally feed around the mouth area. And that's why they're called the kissing bugs. And if you look at them, if you want to look up them up on the internet, look up cone nose bug or assassin bug, and they're very closely related to those. Now, the problem with the kissing bug is that it's known to carry a disease known as Chagas disease. And Chagas disease can be very it can be very bad. And so it's not this far north, but they have been found in South Texas. And so they're moving.
So once again, I guess one of the questions that I have, if you don't mind, Bruce, that I'll butt in here, is what is driving these migrations north? Stumped her.
No, it's just I wasn't, you know, I don't always want to jump on climatology because a lot of people want to use, you know, climatology changes as I don't believe that our climate is changing to the drastic effect that many other scientists believe it is, but a lot of it is habitat changing.
Well, I was wondering because they're tearing up forests and other things, deforestation, which of course upsets the ecosystem entirely, and things have to move out if they
want
to survive.
And you have to realize that these kissing bugs actually originated, this particular species originated in Brazil. And so we know what's going on with the ecosystems in the Central America, and that's driving them north. Habitat destruction.
Right. Bruce, is that good?
Very good. Thank you so much for coming.
Maybe a little bit of climatology, but I don't want to use that as a scapegoat.
Right. Yeah. So, you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502, the number to call about anything concerning our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind. And we're going to go next to Don from Crockett, Texas. Don, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
Thank you. I have two questions I'd like to ask. One is about a year ago, we picked up a litter of kittens, and one of them had this thing embedded in its neck. Now, the vet said it was a werbal. The kitten was tiny, and this thing was about the size of his thumb. It looked like a grub of some kind. Is there anything you can tell me about where they came from and what they are?
Absolutely. In the they're called warblers, but they also go by the name of bot flies. And what it is, it's a fly will come along, and depending on the different species of the bot flies, they'll lay their eggs in some type of an area where it will be nice and warm and moist, and it will hatch. And it'll hatch into a little maggot-like thing. And it basically feeds between the skin and the muscle. So we had that nice fat layer between the skin and the muscle. And they feed on that. And then when they get ready to pupate, because flies pupate just like butterflies will make a pupa or a cocoon, they cut a little hole in the skin. And then when the time comes, they basically just pop right out. Now, I'm surprised Hollywood hasn't picked up on this and made it the theme of, you know, some kind of a horror flick or something like that. But here's the thing. They tend to be rather host specific, but every once in a while, a bot fly that is supposed to be a parasite on one host will skip over and be a parasite on another host. A classic example is that the squirrel bot fly will oftentimes end up on humans. There is a human bot fly, but it only occurs in the tropics. And they tend not to cause any disease. And other than the fact that if they get on cattle, they destroy the leather, because now the leather will have all these holes in it. It's just aesthetic damage. And it, unless they're completely, really infected, it doesn't really hurt the animal any. It's just we don't want to think about a maggot crawling through a body.
Right.
Yeah, it was kind of gross.
Your other question was, Don?
My other question was, the school where I work, we have these, when it rains, we have these little thin worms. Now, somebody said they were spadehead slugs. I'm not sure, but they look about 6 to 8, 10 inches long. Sometimes they're very thin, about the size of a pencil, and the head is shovel shaped.
It absolutely is. This, I can tell you exactly what these are, and they are what we call shovel-headed flatworms. And most flatworms are not terrestrial. This is one of the few flatworms that are terrestrial. And they will, they're basically predators. And right now, it skips my mind on what the shovel-headed flatworm is a predator of. But they're not, I know they're not good. So you should destroy them. And you know what? You could destroy them just like you would a slug. You know what we do with slugs, don't you, Don?
Yep, put salt on them.
Put salt on them, and that'll take care of them, okay?
Okay.
Somebody out there, look up what the shovel-headed flatworm is a predator of and get back to me, because that's bugging me now.
She's having a brain lock there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
All right. Thank you, Don. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and I think they actually did make a movie. It was called Alien, but it was a bug from another planet.
Oh,
so yeah,
wow.
And it definitely grossed you out when it decided to come out of the body. So you can give us a call right now, 800-552-8502. Marty from Flint, Texas, you are online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you tonight?
I'd like for you to talk to me about ants. I have ants, and they are bugging me something fierce. I chase them around the yard with Amdro and this or that other thing, and every time I do, they just pack up and move 10 feet over. Some of them are tiny, tiny little ants, and some of them are some bigger ants. I haven't identified all of them, but they are certainly bugging me.
Well, Marty, let me tell you something about ants. They are, we have something in ecology that we call biomass. And if you were to take all the ants and weighed them in the world, they would weigh more than all the elephants in the world. We are not going to ever effectively control the ants. This is one of those situations when they say, Dr. Burden, when are the insects going to take over the world? Guess what, Marty? They already have. And they just barely allow us to live with them. Now, I can give you a couple hints. One, go to the store and get something that has the chemical acephate, A-C-E-P-H-A-T-E, in it. It's a little white powder. It smells terrible, but it's one of the most effective ant mound killers that I know of. Now, you say they just move. Normally, that's not the case. What's happening in your backyard ecosystem is that you have one main mound that is suppressing smaller mounds. And then when you kill off the main mound, then some of these mounds that were suppressed can then, you know, grow up and take over and then suppress all the other mounds. And that's why they appear to move, but they really don't. There's, if we were able to list all the species of insects in the world, it would take up a massive volume, much more information than the Bible itself. And so there are many species of ants, but we're just going to have to deal with them. Now, if they get in your house, that's another matter. But if they're just outside, then I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I don't resent them so much. I mean, I have a lot of, like, decorative Japanese maples and things, and some of the things that are in pots. But the ants sometimes will actually get into the pot even. And then if I walk around the yard, you know, to do trimming and weeding and things like that, I mean, I get stung by these guys, and they just get all over you, and it's pretty fierce.
It is, and you just have to pay attention to where they are and try to treat those in the pots. And I want to congratulate you, Marty. You said that you get stung. Most people will say that they get bitten by the fire ants, but they're talking about the wrong end of the animal. It's the sting.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I understand also from some of my research that if they are, like I have some in the, I know that are at the base of a couple of my Japanese maples, they do aerate the soil, and it can be a symbiotic relationship, can't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. They can turn over the soil, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they're in the ecosystem, and they do good things, and they do bad things, and, you know, it's just like a pretty dandelion flower in a field is a wildflower. If it grows in your front yard, it's a weed.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah. All right, well, I'll get some of that acetate and try that out. I don't really want to eradicate them, but just I wish I could figure out how to live with them better.
I understand.
All right, thanks for your help.
You're welcome, Marty. Thanks for your call.
Especially in your potted plants, I would
think.
But yeah, I was thinking that, they do aerate the soil. Do they also protect fire ants in particular from other sort of encroaching insects that might be even more debilitating to your backyard? Do fire ants, are they predatory? Do they attack other insect life?
Fire ants will eat anything they can find to eat, but they're very attracted to fat-based, lipid-based, oily-based products. Do fire ants contribute to the ecosystem other than that? Well, there's not a lot of things that eat fire ants, but so I would say no, but everything has its place in nature. I would say that. Now, there is an introduced fly that has been introduced from Brazil to control the fire ants. It's a little forward fly, P-H-O-R-I-D, if you want to look it up. And the mother fly comes along and deposits an egg on the fire ant. The egg hatches into a little maggot grub, crawls into the fire ant's head, and it causes the fire ant to become
decapitated.
Decapitated, and then it develops in the head. And when it wants to emerge as an adult fly, it just cuts a little circle and crawls out the front of the head. It's amazing.
There's another good movie. So
there's
you are listening. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502. Jesse from Shreveport, we've got you on hold, but please stay with us. We've got to go next to a truck driver out there just north of Shreveport. Steve, what's bugging you tonight?
Mosquitoes.
Oh, gosh.
My wife and I, we just purchased a home in southeast Missouri, and this town is the capital of the world for mosquitoes. There's probably billions and billions of them in my yard. And I don't know how to get rid of them. I've tried everything. I went out with mosquito spray, and I sprayed my yard. The town sprays the whole town, and nothing works.
Well, there's several species of mosquitoes, only with about three groups that are going to carry diseases. So you don't have to think about every mosquito bite a potentially disease carrier. But the ones that do carry a large bulk of the diseases, especially the ones that we were talking about earlier, the Zika virus and the West Nile virus, they like to breed in containers. They're container breeders. So you need to go and make sure that you dump all your containers out. Try not to go out between dawn and dusk. Make sure that you wear, you know, long sleeves and pants to keep from getting bit. And, of course, make sure you have screens and you keep your doors closed. But if you're going to go outside, there are some things that you can do, and that is to wear a repellent, something that has DEET in it. And there's a new one now that the CDC is sponsoring or saying that it's okay. It's called Picardian, and it's basically a chemical from the Pepperdine pepper plant. And so there's got to be a water source somewhere around there, and you need to, if you do find a water source, and if it's like somebody's
oh, there's creeks all over around this town.
Yeah.
All over it.
And slow-running creeks, I presume?
Oh, yeah. The guys that are just standing.
That's you're not going to be able to control those. I hate to tell you this, but it's wear your DEET and take the other precautions, and that's all you can do.
So there's nothing I can put in my yard to kind of sit them out?
No, because they fly. Although most mosquitoes don't fly but a few yards, or at least a half a mile would be the majority of what mosquitoes would fly. I hate mosquitoes. I'm sorry to be that way, but I don't like them either. You know, there was one in my house last night, and it just drives me crazy until I find it.
We've also got these mosquitoes that are about the size of a silver dollar.
Oh, those are not mosquitoes. Those are called, around here, I don't know about Southeast Missouri, but around here they're called mosquito hawks, and they're neither mosquitoes or hawks, and they don't eat mosquitoes. They're basically just scavengers, and they're completely harmless. And so they look like mosquitoes, but they're not. If you take a look at their mouth parts, they don't have that needle-like mouth part that a mosquito would. They have little chewing mouth parts.
They're much bigger.
And they're harmless, yeah. No problem.
Well, they don't eat mosquitoes?
No, sir, they do not. That's a myth.
Start killing them too, I guess.
Well, you know, I was talking to a high school group the other day, and I said, they're completely harmless, guys. And this boy goes, well, one flew in my mouth. I said, well, keep your mouth shut. You know?
My daughter, I got a six-year-old. She's terrified of any kind of insect, a fly. It's an insect she's terrified of.
Well, most of the time, children learn their fears from adults or other kids. And so just there's more insects that don't hurt you than there are that do. But if she is that age, tell her not to pick up caterpillars because some of those can have very irritating hairs and bristles on them. And I would hate for her to get hurt that way.
She don't like any kind of bug.
Okay. Then she's probably okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. We've got Rob and Mac online. Jesse is up next. Jesse, what's bugging you tonight?
Yeah, I went to a friend's house in New Orleans a few times. And a couple of the times I wound up getting bit. And, you know, I noticed some marks on my arm and my leg. So I started paying attention, and I noticed that he had maybe bed bugs or something like them. So what happened was the last time I went there, I noticed I got off the couch and off the bed, sit on a wooden chair. But this time, the bites, it's been about a month ago, and the bites are, I can still see dark spots. And then I also saw little small flying bugs. I don't know if bed bugs could fly or whatever it is, but now on top of that, I'll get an itch and I'll look at my arm and it'll be like a mosquito bite, but there's nothing there. Now if I scratch it, it'll turn to a cluster of what looks like mosquito bites, but it's not. So I'm like, what is going on here?
Okay, Jesse, let's do bed bugs first. Bed bugs do not fly. Hopefully, I've just made a lot of people happy with that piece of information. And but they come out at night, and they do feed. They have very similar – they actually are cousins to the kissing bug that we were talking about just a while ago. And they have piercing, sucking mouth parts. Fortunately, bed bugs do not carry any diseases. That's the good thing. Bed bugs look – and I tell this people all the time, they're about the same size, shape, and color of an apple seed. And you should look around the seams of the couch cushions or around the seams of the mattress or the box springs because they like to hide in tight crevices. And if you see any, like, dry blood spots, that's also a sign that there might be a bed bug infestation. Now, about these little flies, they're actually little midges. They're closely akin to gnats, but they are biting midges, and they will create these little wounds on you that mimic mosquito bites. But most of them are harmless, with the exception of sandflies, and they're out in the Middle East, so we're not going to worry about sandflies. And so, you know, just I would put an antibiotic ointment from a secondary infection. It's kind of cute because in some parts of the country, these little gnats, they call them no-see-ums.
That's what they call them in Florida.
Okay. Yep. And so, and then, yeah, so I just got confirmation from Mr.
I remember Mr. when my family came down and said, why do they call them no-see-ums? It's because you can't see them.
That's right.
You know? That's a very simple name.
Okay, now what will they cause, like, if all of a sudden I will itch and I'll scratch it, it'll be like a mosquito bite. And if I continue to scratch that thing, it'll turn to a cluster of, like, mosquito bites. Would that be anything you could be familiar with? Or I'm on a few medications. Would it be something that maybe my medications are reacting with these bites or anything like that?
I'm a PhD, not an MD, but talk to your doctor about it. But I would also encourage you to put something like a Benadryl or something so it doesn't itch so much so you don't scratch, because what you might be seeing is some secondary infection setting in as well. So don't scratch. That's
all
my
right,
advice.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And you could also, you know, take that that patch to your doctor and see if it is, in fact, an allergic reaction, which would, you know, confirm or deny one way or the other. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Nacogdoches for Mac. Mac, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Hi, gentlemen. How are y'all today?
All righty.
Good, good. We're dealing with a moth infestation. We live out in the rural area, what you would call the country, and we have carpet floors, and we've gotten the foggers, and we fogged, and last year was the same thing. They slowed down through the winter, but now as it's warming up, we're starting to see them come back. What can you do about that?
Well, it depends on what kind of moth it is, Mac. Are they small, medium, large?
Medium.
Medium size. Are you seeing them more in the living room or more in the kitchen?
Both.
Both.
And basically in the living room and the kitchen, and not as much in the bathroom where, you know, there are tiles there.
Right.
But it's mostly in the living room and the kitchen and the dining room, those areas.
We could be talking about one or two different moths here. One is called the Indian meal moth, and they will basically, especially in the kitchen, they will eat any kind of food product they can get a hold of. I've had a couple of infestations in my pantry. One time they were feeding on some pecans. The other time they were feeding on some dry pinto beans that I had there. Now, caterpillars are the immatures of moths, and they're going to be feeding on something that's organic in nature. As far as the ones in the living room, you might remember back, Mac, when your grandmother or your mom would have moth pellets that they would, clothes pellets that, that they would put in their cedar chest to keep the clothes moths away. There is several species of those moths. They'll feed on anything from hair, feathers, to fur, some types of upholstery. And so anything that has any type of organic nature to it. You know, most of our things today are synthetic blends. But if you have anything that's even a taxidermic animal that hasn't been properly done, they'll feed on that well. So what you would need to do, Mac, is find the feeding source. Find the feeding material. If you control the immatures, then you can control the adults.
Okay. Okay, yeah, I do know I did have pecans, and I had them next to my recliner where, you know, I was chilling them, and I did have some left over there, and I saw some little, I guess, the
little cat.
Yeah, the little deals of them, but I took all those out, you know, and I cleared out everything, and we still are fogged, and they're still coming back. So.
Well, they may also be emerging from overwintering in your house at this time of the year, but again, I would look for other types of, you know, living organic or dead organic matter that's going to attract them. But, you know, they could be attracted to some kind of unique lighting you have in the area, too. Moths are attracted to light. And so you just be a good detective and just hunt them down.
And check the closets and things like that for you know, old clothes or something like that that they could be attached to.
That's right.
Okay, so there's the foggers that we're using. I mean, they're not. There's nothing I can put in the home to kill it. I'm going to have to find a source.
That's what I would advise you to do, because you can blanketly spray pesticide over your house, but that's not something that I would suggest that you do. And foggers are notoriously things that don't work. Foggers just do not work very good. I've had people complain about foggers. I've never had somebody come up to me and say, I love these foggers. Mm-hmm. They'll kill everything every time. It doesn't happen.
Okay. I really appreciate the information.
Thank you for your
call,
Matt.
You betcha, Matt. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Rob from Coushatta. Rob, you're online with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Yes, I have a problem with fire ants in my pantry and on my carpet and all over my house in the hottest part of the month.
Did you say fire ants?
Fire ants. They will sting you reaching there to grab a box or an opened snatch or something. They'll be in the box, they'll be cut holes in the plastic bags that go around the snacks. And then, well, I've been stung numerous times by just reaching into a box in my pantry. I've tried caulking all the cracks. I've tried spraying old contact, you know, that pesticide that lingers around the corners of the bottoms of the pantry. I've tried everything, and every year they come back. Only during the hottest, driest parts of the month. I live in an elevated home. I've looked all under my house for in beds. I've tried putting poison around my columns that lead up to, you know, to the door, you know, underneath the house. I've tried everything, and they just keep coming and coming. They cover the floor. I don't eat anywhere except in the kitchen. But you'll be on the floor doing something, you start feeling yourself getting stung by fire ants, big fire ants.
Well, that's a pretty heavy infestation, Rob. I'm sorry.
They only come during the summertime. They don't come during the wintertime, only during the summer.
Where do you live, Rob?
I live on top of a dry hill just east of Coushatta.
Well, I was expecting you to say, since your house was up on stilts, that you live somewhere near water. But oftentimes, I don't...
It's built up on blocks.
Right. I, too, get ant problems in my house during the hottest and driest part of the summer, and that's because they're looking for a water source. Instead of looking to control the ants, look to make sure that you're not providing them any kind of a water source, a leaking pipe or standing water or anything like that. That may be part of your problem right there, is that they're coming up looking for water. And, of course, ants have trail pheromones, so when one finds it, and they just keep following the same trails.
Oh, yes. They want to see the trails coming up in the pantry. It looks like a super highway.
Hmm. Yep. And then, you know, seal your food up so they can't get into it. And that may need to be more than just Ziploc bags. You may need to go and find you some of those Rubbermaid containers.
Exactly. That's what I've been doing. But the scary thing is, I've actually put up a sealed candy bar that's sealed in plastic. They ate holes in the plastic. I mean, you could see the holes about the size of a BB where they ate it into plastic and carved it up. But I seal them into the boxes now. That's the only way I can keep snacks or cereals in my pantry is I seal them in Rubbermaid containers and stack them up with labels on the outside.
Plastic, they can chew through. There's no doubt. I mean, even the thicker Ziploc bags, they can chew through that. So plastic's not going to, you know, regular plastic like that is not going to stop them. It's going to have to be the thick-walled plastic containers. And there's just
containers. Yep.
The only other thing I can tell you is that there's apparently something about your exact location. You know, it could be as simple as just applying them. We have something that we call micro habitats, where they can find just the right little places to live in, to where they're nice and cool and there's plenty of water and they're happy. And so
I thought about spraying. Are you familiar with the pesticide everybody uses called around my area called Demon WP?
No, I'd have to look at the label.
It's a synthetic version of permethrin.
Okay.
I thought about spraying all of my treating them again, starting before they come up, start spraying all of my cinder block columns under my, it's in the manufactured home, start spraying all those cinder block columns and soaking all the plastic underneath the house with a hose and sprayer with that. Would that work? It says it's, as long as it doesn't get rained on, it has a lingering effect of a few months.
Yeah, pyrethrins are good, and it might diminish the population, but it's probably not going to take care of the situation 100%. And so if that will give you some relief, then go ahead and do it.
I looked all around for the mounds. I treat the mounds, the SFA and another couple of granules, and I looked everywhere for mounds. I treated every mound I could find within 200 feet of my house.
A lot of ants don't create the mounds, and so there's a lot of them that their mounds are underground, and so that's not always the only way to solve the problem is to treat mounds, because they'll go underground on you.
Oh, yeah, and those little ant traps that you see that they advertise, them little tractor base stations don't work.
Yeah, they don't.
You know, firing stuff, anything. It works those little teeny tiny sugar ants, which are harmless. They never have bothered me much, but I see them going there. But fire ants, they just ignore them. But they do love peanut butter, though. Mm-hmm.
I do, too. Thanks for your call, Rob.
You have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Rob. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We got Robert up next. Jerry from North Shreveport, you'll be up right after that. Please stay on the line. And Robert from Natchez, Mississippi, you're next. What's bugging you?
Well, I got in the middle of the conversation about mosquitoes and the biting gnats, and I have a couple of suggestions I'd like to share.
Great. Let's hear them, Robert.
Okay. Of course, there's no way to totally get rid of mosquitoes. I live in Natchez, and we spend a lot of time in Louisiana at the lakes and stuff, and there are mosquitoes everywhere. The only deterrents that are completely natural are martens and bats, and I greatly encourage that along with the other measures of relieving standing water as best you can. But sometimes you cannot help but be bitten. And like the man with the gnats who's having so much trouble, my suggestion is an old product, name brand product, called Dr. Kirshner's Antiseptic. All it is oil of peppermint and oil of arnica and an alcohol base.
Mm-hmm.
I have bottles next to every place I sit. I have them in the truck. I keep one in my briefcase. Because if I get bitten, if I put Dr. Kirshner's on it right away and distract myself for a few moments, I get no itch, I get no swelling, no problem. And it seems to work with no-see-ums also. I spent some time in West Virginia. The only deterrent we found up there was dryer sheets. If you tuck them under your hat, that seems to keep them off of your face, but they suck pretty bad too. But the Dr. Kirshner's is the main thing I'm calling about. I use it every day. I use it as aftershave. I carry it all the time. I swear by the stuff.
There's a lot of plant oils that will cover up the smell of the natural products produced by the skin that will attract mosquitoes. And you just have to be careful with the plant oils because some people might be hypersensitive and it might cause a more of a rash problem for them. But if that's working for you, absolutely natural plant oils. They're not as repellent as deep, but they will certainly give you a level of protection.
Well, again, this is not the oil to keep them away from you. It's only for the aftermath. Been bitten.
Okay.
It's a solution. And one thing for you, doctor, I heard you say you had a mosquito in the house that was bugging you. I don't like to spray poison, but I will use it. But like in the bedroom or right where you're sitting, I hate to spray flying insect killer. But I have found that some of the floral potpourries, those spray Glade and stuff like that, if you can hit the bug, it doesn't kill them or anything, but it seems to foul up their mechanism and they can't find you easily.
Let me share with one of my little secrets. If you're talking about keeping something handy to shoot them out of the air with, hairspray.
Yes,
old-fashioned hairspray. When it hits the insect, it gums up their wings and basically it's like shooting them out of the air. And they'll just fall down. And when that hairspray dries, they won't be able to move their wings. And so good old-fashioned hairspray works well, too. And a lot of people, I forget about that. Now, as far as the martens and the bats are concerned, Robert, you know, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of things out there that will feed on insects. But normally, they don't decrease the population significantly. There's thousands of mosquitoes and only one Martin. It's not going to touch it. But there is, of course, you know, those things that you can have around you as part of the natural healthy ecosystem that balances things out. So I appreciate your comment on the Martin and the bats. So thank you very much for your call, Robert.
You're listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Are not dragonflies also consumers of mosquitoes?
Yes, absolutely.
So, and everybody loves dragonflies, so just fill your backyard up with dragonflies.
The problem is that dragonflies like to be around water.
Well, there's a problem because mosquitoes like to be around water.
But, you know, if you do have like an outdoor little pond or something, there's these things that are called mosquito donuts, mosquito dinks, and they're slow-released BT toxins, completely safe for the fish, the dog, the cat, but it will kill the larvae of the mosquitoes.
Oh, okay. You are listening to What's Bugging You. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. We go next to Jerry from Shreveport. Jerry, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Oh, no.
Okay, well, we lost that one. Let's try another one here. We're going to go to James from Texas City. James, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Yes, I bought a house at a cheap price, and there was I had to remodel it, and there was a honeybee, or, you know, your regular, look like European bees, in the attic. And I had to tear out, or in the eaves, up inside the house. And I had to tear it out, and I sprayed, I called up a beekeeper, and they wanted like $500 to remove the hive. But they told me to, scrape out all the wax I could. Well, I did that. I got up there and put mosquito net netting over my head and wore, a heavy coat and everything. And I got scraped out all the wax. Well, the bees came back. And I was very frustrated this time. I was running out of money on my remodel, and I couldn't afford the $500. And so I poisoned the bees with a wasp killer, and it did not even faze them a bit. And after that, whenever I got stung, apparently they were full of that wasp poison. And I mean, I'd be out for a couple of days. My arm would swell up, and I couldn't find it. They did not react to the poison like normal insects would. Did not affect them. And I was just curious as to how you would have handled this. They finally went away. I had to paint. I got up there and chased them out again, and then painted like a black tar paint. And they finally decided to go somewhere else. But they definitely were attached to that spot.
Right. I would have handled this in two ways. One, I would have called the county extension agent office. Most of the time that your county extension agent office, and every county in Texas have them, will know beekeepers that will come out and remove a hide for very little money, or if anything at all. They do it as a public service. Mm-hmm. And so whoever was going to charge you $500 to remove the hide, that's just ridiculous. The other thing I would have done is there's a way that you can... are you familiar with certain fish traps where the fish can swim in, but then they can't swim out because the neck is kind of curved in?
Yes, ma'am.
You can build similar contraptions, and so that the mosquitoes, once they leave, they cannot come back into the hive. And
mean bees.
Bees.
Yeah, the bees.
What did I say?
Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes. I've been talking about mosquitoes
on the brain.
Yeah. And so once the bees leave the hive, then they cannot return. And then eventually the colony will just collapse. And so that's the second way I would have handled it. But definitely one of those two should have been able to work for you without... I'm sorry you had to go through all that trouble. The third thing I was talking about... They got to be getting in somewhere, plug it up,
Yes.
But a lot of people like the thing about allowing them to leave and not come back because that's less intense, you know, it's less cruel
right.
kind of a thing.
But the extension agent seems like that would be almost the best because then they would they would move them to a place where they might actually be ecologically appropriate.
Absolutely.
Such as a wooded area or something like that where they could actually do their job of pollinating other plants.
And for the people that are in Louisiana, we have our local extension people in each parish. Here in the Shreveport area, it's just right over on 70th Street next to the Jimmy Davis Bridge. And they know people, and so that's the way to go.
Your agricultural extension agency is always a useful agency.
Absolutely.
Yes, I do believe they've helped me out in the past.
Oh, yeah.
But what surprised me was that spraying your typical bug toxin did not even phase the bees, and I felt so bad about it. And it came back to bite me, of course.
Yeah.
Literally.
Sting, not bite, but that's okay.
Well, yeah.
We know what we mean. Thanks for your call, James.
Sure.
Thank you, James. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We go next to Milton from Longview, Texas. Milton, you're online with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Yes, ma'am. I have a rabbit hutch shed set up that I keep rabbits in, and I went on a long weekend, and the person who was supposed to help out with the rabbits while I was gone, she did not empty out the trays for the manure, so I have a really bad house fly problem all of a sudden, and I cleaned out all the manure. There's no really standing water or manure or anything that I think that would be attracting them, but I've got hundreds of them in that shed now, and they won't. They don't seem to want to vacate. I don't want to spray in there with animals. I was just wondering if you had a plan. I've tried to use a fly trap that I bought from the store, and it's not doing anything.
Right. Well, Milton, what I would suggest for you to do is to go back into the hutch and look for any kind of a moist environment. It doesn't have to be manure. And, of course, if there were maggots growing in your water troughs, you would be able to see those. But maggots cannot develop without moisture. And so even if you have to put a fan and dry that place out, do that. And if you control the moisture, you can control maggots. If you control moisture, you can control termites. And those are just key rules of thumb that we use in the entomological world. And so that's about it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Milton. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. We go next to Mike from Bossier City. Mike, what's bugging you tonight?
Hello, Dr. Beverly.
Hello.
This is an ongoing ant question, invasion in the house. I live in a single-story dwelling in an older neighborhood in Bossier City. And I've heard a couple of your comments about ants. What I have a problem is in my bathroom, and they appear to be what I would call sugar ants, small. They're sporadic. There's not a trail that I can ever trace. It's not excessive, but it's enough to bother me. You know, if I find one a day, that bothers me. You mentioned the product earlier. It smells really bad, but I wrote it down somewhere on my phone.
It's called Acephate, A-C-E-P-H-A-T-E.
Okay. I've sprayed around my house, my windows, with a product that a good friend that worked for Ortho, which I believe is probably like possibly better. You can buy it at Home Depot or Lowe's. And that helps immensely with other problems that we've had, like with German cockroaches. And we had a paste that he gave us. I'm wondering, can you suggest other things that I can use to help and try to eliminate them? And it's only in my bathroom.
Yeah. There's a couple things you can do. You could go ahead. And if you look at the active ingredient on the label, most Ortho products are pyrethrins, and the active ingredient will end in T-H-R-I-N. And I would spray the the edges of the bathroom, along the floor, and then maybe around a cabinet, even on the insides of cabinets. If you're not going to be, since it's a bathroom, you're not going to be storing any food products in there.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be one thing you can do. The other thing I'm going to suggest that you do is, again, make sure that there's not a water source in that bathroom. If there, you know, I know you can't cut off the toilet or anything, but if there's any leaky pipes and stuff like that, you might want to take care of that. And the ants that you're describing are called crazy ants. And the reason that they're called crazy ants is because they just run around like crazy. And they don't follow the typical trail that you find with other ants, which means that it's very difficult to find out where they're coming and where they're going. And so that's a problem. Okay. But I would start off with just spraying the edges of the bathroom, around the tub, and things like that, and see what kind of control you get there.
All right, let me ask you another question here. I work with horses, and we use a warmer, reason-based warmer, which is basically a gel solid. Would that work in certain situations, like around the windowsills?
I wouldn't think so, because the worms that you're trying to control in horses are nematodes, and ironically, they're called roundworms, and ironically, they have the same chemical that protects them that insects do, but I don't think that would work on them at all.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have an anonymous caller from Dry Prong online next. And I don't know your name, but what's bugging you tonight?
I'm sorry. I'd give him my name. It's Ben.
Okay, Ben. Well, they didn't give it to me. So, Ben, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I got two little things. First off, I thought about you here a month or two back, Ms. Burton. I don't know if you caught the show. You Bet Your Garden, first thing in the morning, they had a lady on there from Rutgers, entomologist. They spent a whole hour talking about Zika.
The Zika virus?
Yeah.
A lot of people are talking about the Zika virus these days. And I don't watch that show, listen to that show, because my husband works at night here at the radio station.
It's up too early.
And it's just, we're not morning people.
Yeah, it's a pretty good show. And the other thing, well, it's not, it is insect related, but it's my grandbaby here. Her little Dotson has discovered and fallen in love with June bugs, and she's just terrified that that dog out there eating June bugs is going to hurt that dog. And I've been trying to, and she's listening.
Okay.
She's too haunted to get on the phone.
Guess what?
Can you tell her it's not going to hurt it?
Yes, I can. And guess what? Wally and I have a dachshund, and she'll eat those June bugs. And I'll tell you something else she'll eat. When it's rainy weather like this and the earthworms crawl up and get on the pavement and die on the driveway and dry up, she'll scrape those things off and eat them. The June bugs will not contain anything that will harm the pets, will harm your little dachshund, your little wiener dog. Mine eats them too, and she's 15 years old, and she's been eating them for 15 years. And so if it was going to do something bad to her, it would have done something bad to her already. Now, you may not like the idea that she's eating the June bugs, but, you know, apparently she likes them, or he likes them, and it'll be fine.
I'm thrilled.
Yep.
They're not crunching when you step out of the house.
It's fine.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. And you have been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And Beverly, I want to thank you for joining us again.
Absolutely. We got a lot of good calls today. I appreciate everybody who called in.
And Dr. Beverly Burton is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. And we again want to thank everybody who called in tonight. And we hope you'll tune in for Health Matters this Thursday night at 6 p.m. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Burton, along with assistance from Wally Derleth, Tim Schnell, and Susan Keith tonight. And Dr. Burton is our expert resident entomologist. Stay tuned. We have Radiolab coming up next on Red River Radio.